Do you want to know your future? And when you think about it, if you did know your future, it would probably change how you see your life now, right? I mean, there's some parts of our future I guess we don't want to know in some sense because it's going to probably be a bad ending for all of us. I mean, we all die. Not being morbid, just we all die. Just fact. Nobody's being weird here. The one thing that's for sure going to happen to all of us ought to be able to be talked about in public, polite public. But there's a sense in which we're all curious about our future. We hope for the best, and in some sense, we fear the worst, some more than others. But there's always the question in the back of our mind, is anybody in charge of this? Is anybody in control? Is there anybody in charge, or is it all just sort of random in a random universe? That's kind of the question, I think, that really comes down to our lives and the future and what makes sense out of the present in our lives. Now, when you read your Bible, and a lot of times when you read the teachings of Jesus in particular, you see that almost like a porpoise that keeps coming up for air, that Jesus kind of has a thread that keeps coming up. And in some sense, it's the thread that's sowing the truth of his message one stitch at a time. And that's this thread of always hitting the fact that he's re-narrating our present lives by narrating our future. There's a sense in which Jesus is always talking to us about the future to re-narrate our present lives now. And Jesus spoke like someone who believed that he was the only one who actually controlled the future, the only one who actually could define that. And so, like how he does here with the early Christians that lived in this city called Smyrna. Now, we're looking through the book of Revelation. It's kind of obviously a weird book because it's a vision that the Holy Spirit gave to the Apostle John. And so in that vision, in chapters 2 and 3 of Revelation, Jesus is giving messages to seven churches. Smyrna is one of those churches. Smyrna was an ancient city in what we would call modern-day Turkey. In fact, all these cities, in these seven cities in Revelation 2 and 3, are in that area. It was called Asia then. We don't call it Asia now. It's modern-day Turkey now. But let's look at verse 8 on what Jesus is talking about, defining our present by narrating our future. He says this, "To the angel of the church in Smyrna, write, these are the words of him who is the first and the last, who died and came to life again." So this is Jesus. This is the one who was crucified. This is the one who rose from the dead. This is the one who ascended into heaven and lives now to give this message through the Holy Spirit to the Apostle John. He says, "I know your afflictions and your poverty, yet you are rich. I know about the slander of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan." Not holding any punches there. "Do not be afraid of what you are about to suffer. I tell you, the devil will put some of you in prison to test you, and you will suffer persecution for 10 days. Be faithful, even to the point of death, and I will give you life as the victor's crown. Whoever has ears, let them hear what the Spirit says to the churches." This is really important because after every letter it says this, whoever has ears, let whoever has ears hear what the Spirit is saying to the churches. If you're part of a church, any church, if you have ears, we're supposed to hear the Spirit of God in some way giving a message to us. It's not just a message to the Christians who lived in this city called Smyrna in the first century. And it goes on to say, "The one who is victorious will not be hurt at all by the second death." I think that's the judgment that we read about later in the book of Revelation. Now, those who believe in Jesus, and I would imagine in this group here, we're at church on Sunday morning, a large part of this room believe in Jesus, but there are also people here, I know, every Sunday, who you don't believe in Jesus. You've been polite, you've come as a guest of a friend or a relative, or those who have, you grew up believing in Jesus, you've been believing in Jesus, but now certain circumstances in your life, certain things you want in your life are causing you to doubt that and making you consider abandoning your belief in Jesus. Wherever you are on this spectrum, this is how the Bible is telling you who the Jesus of the Bible is. Remember I said a few weeks ago, your faith, your Christian faith, this is super important, your Christian faith is not about American Christianity. On a scale of things when it comes to Christianity, both in the demographics of people who are Christians and in the time of history Christianity has existed, American Christianity is like a little bad nightmare, a little blip. There's good things about it. I'm a Christian. You're a Christian if you're a Christian. There's good things about it, but nobody wants to put their faith in American Christianity. If that were Christianity, if American Christianity were what it is, in the sense that that's what I had to put my faith in, I'm an atheist. I would be an atheist. It's about who Jesus is. It's about dealing with who the Jesus of the Bible really is. And so even in this passage, we get some phenomenal pictures of who the Jesus of the Bible is. He says he's the first and the last. And when he says that, to a Jew listening to that in the first century, that would be like us quoting John 3:16. He's quoting from an Old Testament passage in Isaiah 44, verse 6, where God says this. It says, this is what the Lord, now we've said this before, but let me just say it for those who are new. When you read in your English Bible, all capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D, that's your English Bible translating the Hebrew name for God, which was Yahweh, which meant he is. It's talking about the I am. God calls his name the I Am in the Old Testament. So here's what he's saying. This is what the I Am says. I am the first and the last. Apart from me, there is no God. So when Jesus says, I am in Revelation, I am the first and the last, the one who died and I live again, he's saying, apart from me, there is no God. I am the I Am. I am the creator. I am the only God. And then the first chapter, now we come back to Revelation, this weird book of Revelation. In the first chapter, the Apostle John talks about in his vision, the first time he sees this ascent, not just the risen Jesus, but the glorified ascended Jesus. He says this in verse 17, chapter 1. This is before the passage we're looking at today. He said, when I saw him, I fell at his feet as though dead. Then he placed his right hand on me and said, do not be afraid. I am the first and the last. He says it again here. I am the first and the last. I am the living one. That's kind of a way of saying I am the I Am. I am the one who is. I am the living one. I was dead, and now look, or behold, I am alive forever and ever. And I hold the keys of death. I am the I Am. I am the first and the last. I am life itself, and I hold the keys of life itself forever. That's what Jesus is saying. That's the Jesus of the Bible. The last chapter in Revelation, verse 22, the last chapter, or chapter 22, verse 13, says, Jesus says this. He says, I am the Alpha and the Omega. Now, those are the first and last words of the Greek alphabet, right? So it'd be like saying, I am the A and the Z. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the first and the last, the beginning and the end. Now you're thinking, okay, that's all kind of interesting. Jesus has a very high opinion of himself in the Bible, and he wants us to have that same opinion too. So what? Well, wait a minute. Just think about it for a minute. If it is so what, I mean, if Jesus really did die and really did rise from the dead, I mean, that's kind of the it, right? That historical claim is kind of the it of whether or not all this is true, any of this is true or not. If that's not true, none of this is true, and we're all pitied people. But if it's true, well, that means your life is about Jesus. Whether that's your perspective or not about your life, it means that in reality, your life is about Jesus. You can know that or you can not know that, but the reality is your life is about Jesus. If Jesus really did die and rise from the dead, then he is the arc of the narrative of the universe. And he is the only one who can make any sense at all out of the narrative of your life. If that's true, he's the only one that can make any sense out of the narrative of your life. You want to know your future? Only Jesus does. You want to control your life and control your future? Well, only Jesus does. You're inside his story. You're inside his story. He's the first. He's the creator of everything. He is God. He's the creator of all that exists. He's the last. Everything exists for him. He's the Alpha, and he's the Omega. He's the A, and he's the Z. Try saying that, the Z. And everything in between. It's all about him. You're inside his story. He's the one who is and who was and who is to come. Even that language, I'm the one who is, who was, who is to come, it sort of bounces back in time zones. Is, was, it's, he's the infinite. He's the living one. He's the eternal one. And he's alive forever and ever, and he holds the keys of life. That's kind of the so what. That's the story of this universe, and that's the only story of this universe, and that's the only story your life is in forever, whether that's your perspective or not. And Jesus says that he's promising a future that should re-narrate your present. Let's look at verse 10 again. Be faithful. What's the word faithful mean? Full of faith. Be faithful, even to the point of death, which all of us will have. Nobody's exempt. We all die. Doesn't take faith to believe that point of Christianity. That's just something everybody can just know by any way of observing reality. Be faithful, even to the point of death, and he's the one who does. I will give you life as your victor's crown. Whoever has ears, let them hear what the Spirit says to the churches. Whoever, the one who is victorious, that word in the Greek from which we translate the word victorious is the word that we get the word Nike. Whoever overcomes, whoever is victorious, whoever conquers life, so to speak, and the challenges of life by being faithful to me, whoever is victorious will not be hurt at all by the second death. You ever notice that the perspective of being on a horizon of some kind does something inside of you? Whether you're sitting on a beach or on a balcony overlooking the ocean at sunset or at sunrise, or whether you're sitting on a mountain overlooking a valley and you can just see forever. Imagine doing that, and there's something about that perspective of seeing that kind of horizon that is calming. It does something. It's perspective changing. And there's something about it that makes us just want to stare. And it does something inside of us emotionally. There's something about seeing the horizon and the distance that is healing for us psychologically. Jesus is giving you perspective of the horizon here. Jesus is taking you on a mountain and showing you the distant horizon. He's taking you on a balcony and showing you the sunset of a distant horizon. And he wants this horizon to change your perspective of your life now. Perspective is just another word for faith. Faith is not this blindfolded thing where you just kind of go through life and you just wish. Faith is way different than that in the Bible. Faith is seeing reality a certain way. And so perspective is just another word for faith. Seeing the horizon changes your perspective. It changes your faith, what your faith is in. So what's your horizon in your life right now? What's the distance for you right now? What's that distant horizon in your life that you're looking at in the narrative of your life? And how are you going to get there? What is it? Just death? Or is it something that's a greater horizon than that? Because see, perspective is everything. Perspective is everything. And Jesus says that our perspective of our present and our perspective of the horizon is always going to be tested from time to time by all these different circumstances that come into our life story. They're always going to test our faith in some way. When I was 22 years old, my wife and I came on staff with a Christian organization called Campus Crusade for Christ. It's a ministry called Crew now. And we had to go out to staff training at the headquarters in California at the time. And we went with a friend of ours named Karen Johnson. She's Karen Ogler now, I think. But Karen's dad, Mr. Johnson, let us use his car to drive out to California for 2 months and drive back. And then we had this car packed. And after the 2 months of staff training, the car was packed, the whole back seat was packed, the trunk was packed, Karen was kind of pressed up against the wall, the door and the window in the back seat. Jeanette and I were kind of in the front. And just to make things worse, and I had a little TV on top the dashboard thing. This is just me, a little portable TV, because I liked going through cities and watching TV as we went through. It's just bizarre, I know. This is a lot about my personality. And we're ready to go. And we got these iPhones now, so don't laugh too hard. You're watching TV. But I start pulling out, just everybody ready to go, kids? Okay, and I put it in drive, you know, the old Mr. Johnson's car, Oldsmobile, and I start to go forward and I just go 3 miles per hour, and because the TV's there, I didn't quite see a car coming down the hill real, and the car comes right there, and as I go right here, it's amazing the damage you can do going 3 miles per hour if you hit the side of a car going by you just right. And I just ripped off the entire side of this guy's car. Put the TV down real quick. And I get out and I go over, and it turns out this was an older guy who was a retired pastor who was on staff with Campus Crusade. He was actually joining Campus Crusade with us as well. And he was going to be in charge of Campus Crusade's prayer ministry. They pray. That's what they do for the ministry. They just pray. So he's probably got a pretty good relationship with God, I'm thinking. He comes by, and he puts his arm around me, and he said, I'll never forget it. He said, now why do you think the Lord had this for you and me today? I don't know. It's crazy, isn't it, how God works? I don't know, we'll find out. But I'll never forget it, because what he was doing was bringing perspective into a bad situation. He was bringing an assignment into an accident, what we would think of as an accident. He was changing perspective, and Jesus is bringing perspective here. That's what he's doing. He says in verse 9, I know your afflictions and your poverty. Well, that's one way to see your reality. That's one perspective of your life, but Jesus has a different one. Yet you're rich. I know you don't see it. You see affliction and poverty, but trust me, I say you're rich. And I kind of know. I kind of know the bigger story. I kind of know the bigger picture. I know about the slander of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. Never a good thing. Do not be afraid of what you are about to suffer. I tell you, because I know the future, I know the present, the devil will put some of you in prison to test you. Now that word test can also mean tempt. So if the devil's doing it, he's trying to tempt. God's allowing it to happen in order to test. Same word, same event, different outcomes, different reasons. And you will suffer persecution for 10 days. Now we're reading Revelation, right? So numbers in Revelation aren't literal numbers. It's not like 10 days, okay, alarm goes off, we're free. Because he says, be faithful even to the point of death. So the 10 days, well, some of them are gonna die, okay? So let's get to the real issue here. 10 days is symbolic of a definite, defined period of time and no more. Not a minute more, not an hour more. I'm going to let the devil work on you. He's going to tempt you, in my mind, to test you, and you're going to suffer. This is going to happen. You're gonna be put in prison. Some of you are even gonna die, but it's gonna just be 10 days. A definite amount of time, not literally 10 days, but 10 days compared to an eternity is the idea here. So be full of faith. keep perspective, even to the point of death, and I will give you life. I hold the keys. I will give you life. I'm the living one. I will give you life. I'm the first, the last, the beginning and the end, the Alpha and the Omega, and everything's about me. I am the I am, and there is no other. And if you are full of faith, I will give you life as your victor's crown. Now, all this is because Smyrna was a unique city. In 25 AD, all these cities in this region were competing to be awarded the right to have the temple for the worship of the Emperor Tiberius built in their city. So this is like trying to get Amazon to come to your community. This is going to bring a lot of public access, a lot of economic success into our city. And so Smyrna won that right. So they have the temple now. They have the temple that's for emperor worship in their city. And that's a source of great pride and economic prosperity for them. A dominant cultural idol with tremendous social pressure, however. Because then in about 52 AD, Christianity is spreading throughout the Roman Empire, and a church happens in Smyrna. There are believers in Smyrna, and in this particular city, these Christians have a big problem because their unwillingness to conform to the worship of the emperor is going to cause them to be seen as treacherous. It's going to cause them to be seen as unpatriotic. It's going to cause them to be seen as sort of a danger to the culture in this cultural idol that is dominant in their city. And by this time also, by New Testament times, Smyrna had a fairly large Jewish population. We know this from archaeology. We know this from ancient letters. And the ancient letters show that this Jewish population had soon become very hostile toward Christianity that had popped up in their city, probably because a lot of Jews were becoming converted to Christ. But Jesus makes it clear that this was not really a Jews versus Christianity thing, because in fact, the New Testament says that Christianity is thoroughly Jewish. Jesus was a Jew, the 12 apostles were all Jews, all of the authors of both the Old Testament and the New Testament were all Jewish, except for Luke. And the Bible says that when you become a Christian, you actually become a Jew. It's not that you become a Christian, you're becoming what has always been spiritually the promise to the Jews. If you're a Christian, you're a Jew, according to the Bible. So it was not really a Jewish versus Christianity thing, it was real versus fake Jews in Jesus' mind, in a spiritual sense. So the Jews that Jesus is referring to here as the synagogue of Satan were slandering, that's what the word devil means, slanderer. They were slandering the Christians to the Roman authorities by claiming that Christians were not worshiping the emperor and were dangerous to society because they were not part of this worship of the emperor. Now, Jews were exempt, so they can tell on Christians all they wanted because Roman law allowed the Jews to be exempt from emperor worship. Not true to the Christians. All the citizens except Jews were required by local law to make sacrifices to the emperor from time to time, but a faithful Christian could not participate in that. And so by not participating in that, they would be excluded from the city's public life and the economic life, possibly publicly shamed in some way because they weren't participating in the imperial religion, the religious nationalism. So Jesus says in verse 9, I know your afflictions and your poverty. And that was because even though the cultural idol was so dominant, Christians could never compromise, and so they got marginalized in the economics of the city. They had afflictions and poverty, literally. They were marginalized, they were slandered, they were shamed publicly. They were even put in prison. They would even be executed because of their refusal to participate in the dominant cultural idol. So really they had to choose what they wanted more. Did they want Jesus or to not have afflictions and hardships and poverty. That was their choice. Jesus or not have afflictions and poverty. And because this letter is to anyone who has ears to hear what the Spirit says to the churches, Jesus says we all have to make that same choice in our life at times. And you can't do it without the perspective of the horizon. So Jesus says in verse 10, "Do not be afraid of what you are about to suffer. I tell you, the devil will put some of you in prison to test you, and you will suffer persecution for 10 days. It'll be a short, defined period of time, but be faithful even unto death. It might be death. Your afflictions might lead to death. No promises. But I will give you life as your victor's crown." So Jesus is giving perspective. We must always connect the 10 days, this defined short period of time of hardship, short compared to, well, life in all eternity. What's 10 days compared to eternity, even if that 10 days is years and years? It may be the 10 days that come because you won't compromise in your faith and bow to the dominant cultural idols. And so you might be criticized. You might be slandered in our culture today. You might be publicly shamed on social media. You might be lonely because nobody wants to be your friend. You might even have financial problems because, you know, you might take a hit in your job. You might have serious career setbacks. There is tremendous pressure to submit to the dominant cultural idols in any age. But it also might just be afflictions that come your way because of illness, loss of a relationship, divorce. It might be the death of a loved one. It might be your own encroaching death. But like with the Christians in Smyrna, all of our hardships are vertical. Not really horizontal. I mean, there's Satan for them, there's the Roman authorities for them, there's the Jews who aren't Jews, but Jesus is making it very clear, he's the one in charge. All of our hardships are always ultimately an issue between us and Jesus. He's in control. And you know that you're living more and more in the perspective of the real horizon and the perspective of the real narrative in your life when even regardless of the indirect causes that may happen, you know, people, bosses, culture, social media, whatever those immediate causes are, you actually begin to see Jesus's loving hand, sovereign hand as the I am behind what would otherwise seem to be just random events in your life. Accidental, unfortunate, pointless, but they're none of those things. Jesus says, don't be afraid, keep the faith, keep your perspective, and I will give you life. And I've got the keys. So what's your perspective? Do you see Christ in your hardships where they would otherwise seem random, unfair? You're a victim? Because see, what Jesus is saying is your hardships are not really accidents. Just like when Ben Jennings put his arm around me, your hardships are assignments. Here's a story of Emily McMurtry. Her husband died, passed away a couple months ago. Both of them were at the point in their life where they had to go to an assisted living facility, and this was her perspective. Let's take a moment and watch what she has to say.
When we first came to the Crossing, we would go to your 8 a.m. service. Every Sunday we were there. John had to walk with the walker, and then eventually he could, you know, he just couldn't get around at all. He needed help. It was too hard. I mean, I couldn't get him there. And then whenever he took sick, kids said, "You can't live alone. Your guys are going to have to move." The good Lord said, "Hey, this is another opportunity. Here I am." I just went to the people in charge here and I asked if it would be possible to have the Crossing streamed in here, and they did. To me, God puts you at the right place at the right time for the right reason. Here I am, just open the doors. I think hopefully it's making more people aware that crisis with us wherever we are. The best thing is to be available, to help people, love people, love thy neighbor as thyself.
That's perspective, right? This isn't some random, meaningless event that she can complain about. This is an assignment. And Jesus gives perspective to us. I know your afflictions. I know your afflictions and your poverty. And I know that's how you see the narrative, but Jesus says, trust me, trust me, just trust me. You're rich. I know you're rich. That's the real narrative of their life, and that's the real narrative of our life when we be faithful, even unto death. What about your life? Are you rich? What makes you rich? Maybe the question that they had to deal with is the question that we always have to deal with, and that's this. Would you want more? What do you want more, Jesus? Or to get out of your hardships? I mean, that's not an easy one, right? But just maybe thumbs up or kind of up. Which one is it? Do you want Jesus more than your hardships? I mean, getting out of your hardships? Or get out of your hardships more? What is that for you? I often think of this scene when it comes to my own life and this idea of 10 days of hardship and then I get life forever. I think of this scene in The Shawshank Redemption where he's breaking out of prison, finally breaking out of prison, and he has to crawl through all this liquefied poop to get out of prison and be free. Let's take a moment and watch that scene because I think about it a lot.
Andy crawled to freedom through 500 yards of smelling foulness I can't even imagine. Or maybe I just don't want to. That's the length of 5 football fields. Just shy of 0.5 mile.
Would you do that? Crawl through 500 yards of poop? No, you wouldn't crawl through 500 yards of poop unless you were trying to have life. Then what others see as poop, you see as a path. Pooper path. It's all a matter of perspective. Now, when you see the horizon that Jesus is talking about here, 500 yards of poop, just 10 days of hardship, whatever that is for you, unto death even, perhaps, is all just a matter of perspective. Because, see, Jesus is telling you here, I know your afflictions. Trust me, you're rich. You will suffer for 10 days. There's no question about it. But be faithful. Keep perspective, even unto death, and I will give you life. Victor's crown.